first in a new series of the News Quiz Extra. It's like the normal news quiz, but with more legroom, which is wasted on me. Enjoy. On with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a headline from the Northampton Chronicle and Echo, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Doggers put off by trimmed bushes at Northampton lay-by.
And our thanks to John Nottingham for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Miles Jupp. And opposite them on my left, Rick Wakeman and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who wants to keep secrets but take liberties?
Well, this is the government's new proposals to secretly friend the entire nation. Basically, what they want is they want it to be legally binding for internet providers to keep a record of, well, almost everything we do on the internet, really. And, I mean, this is wrong. The government should not spy on our private internet communications, because that is the job of the Murdoch Empire and Google. It's just pointless doubling up, you know. It's our own fault, in a way, because we fell in love with these new shiny digital technologies that allow us to communicate incessantly and instantly, but they have come with a price. And now the government is seeking to extend its power so that they can access our emails, which are, of course, 99.99% insignificant drivel, although they're all marked as urgent. But then the government's justification for extending these powers is that it's in order so they can catch terrorists. But I think, really, they'll only be able to catch one kind of terrorist, which is the fantastically stupid terrorist, because no terrorist with any nous is going to use media that can be easily recorded or intercepted.
Surely, if the terrorists want to use the internet to communicate secretly, they can just do it on page 2 of Google search, because nobody ever looks at it.
Well, I heard that Theresa May saying that the favourite method of communication for terrorists currently is Skype, which, for some reason, conjured up this mental image of sort of hardcore Al-Qaeda operatives saying, "No, we can just see your nose. Move your chair back. Move your chair back."
I love the idea. Terrorists in balaclavas going, "No, no, it's me. It is me."
I think it's sad that letter-writing skills among terrorists have diminished so much. We think of the 19th century, there are all sorts of anarchists blowing up things, and they must have, they probably have beautiful penmanship.
Yes.
Would sit down and take the time to write a letter. I mean, a network meant something in those days.
Yeah. I thought these things were all allowed anyway. You know, I would sort of hope, in a way, that the intelligence services could look wherever they wanted to most of the time. You know, some sort of big file lands on the desk in Spooks, and Peter Firth is saying to everyone, right, let's get up on the screen, there's this big Russian criminal, and he's done this and he's done that. You sort of think that's okay. You don't sort of think, well, never mind what the poor criminal's done, what about his privacy rights, for heaven's sake?
Did you go to boarding school, Miles? No, it's just Matron read all our letters, and you have that sort of sound that it's perfectly okay.
Well, no, it's funny you should say that, because when I was at a prep school on Sunday, it was letter writing before lunch.
Yes.
And so you would write a letter, and then you'd take it up to the front, and whoever was on duty would go through the letter and point out grammatical errors to you, or spelling errors. But presumably, actually, what they were doing was making sure that you weren't writing, "Dear Mum and Dad,
yes.
I expect all the Latin department are members of a terror cell."
Yes.
People keep talking about our rights being taken. We haven't had it since John Major and Tony Blair let rip. We've got the only rights that we have is we can graze our geese on common land and take things back to Marks and Spencer's.
Can you take geese back to Marks and Spencer's?
I just got the feeling that every time I do an email that somebody's actually reading it, apart from the person that I'm sending it to. And so I do deliberately put little things into the emails just in case somebody is reading it, like, you know, I hope that not too many people heard the explosion, you know, things like that, and you know, and the bomb-making factory is coming on really, really well. And do you know, I've got another key for Buckingham Palace. You put things in like that because you just never know what happened. Then you get strange cars parking outside your door, which is really quite nice. I did actually once have Special Branch parked outside my house because I'd been to Brazil, this back in the 70s, early 70s, and spent quite a lot of time with Mr. Biggs. And unbeknown to me, when I came back to England, because I'd met with him, that Special Branch actually parked outside my house for about a month. And it was so blatantly obvious they were in some sort of like horrible little Hillman Avenger or something. And I used to take tea out for them. I used to give them tea. It was blatantly obvious what they were.
Why did you go meet Mr. Biggs? Was he your...
He met me.
Did he owe you money? What happened?
We got off the plane and arrived at the hotel, and then we were at the bar. There's a surprise, and there was a tap on the shoulder, and it was Ronnie Biggs. And he said, nice to hear a nice English voice. He said, you're here for 2 weeks. Let's have some fun. And we did. And... But the joke was, I mean, I was, 12 or 13 or something when the great train robbery took place, so I sort of said to these Special Branch guys, I mean, what did you think I did? Like, hid the money in my satchel or something?
David Cameron has defended plans to create secret courts and to extend powers to monitor the public's emails, phone calls and social media communications. The Prime Minister said, where there are gaps that need to be plugged, we need to plug those gaps. And it's thinking like that that makes him so respected.
We didn't talk about the secret courts, did we?
No. Oh, we can do if you like.
Well, we didn't. We should have done, shouldn't we?
Well, I...
A secret, Jeremy.
Yeah.
You can't talk about them.
Because MI6 don't want us to know things.
It was the CIA.
Oh, CIA don't want to tell us anything.
It was the CIA who don't want the
MI6
to tell us anything.
The CIA will discover that something will happen on British territory.
Yeah.
And they will tell us we've discovered a thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they won't tell us...
That's
what
already
the thing
happened.
Is.
That's what Theresa May and others have said has already happened, is that there was an incident where they discovered that there was going to be a Mumbai-style attack. And
people were going to phone us up and try and get us to change service providers. With a strong Indian accent, but claiming some ridiculous English name. Hello, it's Hereward the Wake caller.
No, in theory, the Americans sort of tipped us the wink that something was on the cards, but they wouldn't give us the details because they were worried it would get revealed in open court. So our security services, because they are good, we've seen spooks, then had to make their own investigation, which they did, and then they thwarted this.
They found it anyway.
Yeah.
I think there should just be secret courts that are so secret that they don't even arrest us at all, that they try us and sentence us and then just leave us alone completely. So we don't even know that we've been convicted and that we're under house arrest with a degree of leniency.
If you want to let the government know what you think of the proposal, write your thoughts in an email and send it to... Well, actually, anybody. 2 points to Andy. Rick, who wants universities to put exams to the test?
Oh, this is the change of who actually writes the papers, the A-level papers, because they said they're getting too easy now, which is probably true. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when A-levels were so hard that nobody got into university at all. And then it was decided that it was unfair that some people could have the humiliation of going to a polytechnic, so that everything should be called a university. So they had to make the exams considerably easier in order for everybody to get in to one of these places. So the government took over making the exam papers and changed things from, like, an English lit from Romeo and Juliet to Janet and John to make things much much more simple for them to get in. But it's now decided that it should be the universities themselves that set the exams, because they understand the rigours students are going to have to deal with when they get to university. And so in order to get A-level students prepared for university, starting right at junior schools and at some comprehensive, they're going to put bars in, so that people can learn to get completely rat-arsed way before they get there.
What do you think about Michael Gove? I don't know if you can still get them. There used to be a thing to dispense sweets, which had a little head on it. And sort of, do you remember the book?
Pez.
A Pez dispenser. Mm-hmm. He looks like a Pez dispenser possessed by a Victorian ghost.
They shouldn't have exams at all. I mean, I think the modular thing, which they're against, where you do a bit at a time, is much better, because otherwise it's all just down to that 3-minute dash. And all exams really show is the last bit, because they always say, oh, there's no point revising in the last 3 or 4 months before the exam. Only revise for 4 seconds a day and then go for a long walk in the countryside with a faithful dog over hills and dales and drink some ginger beer and make sure you get 40 hours sleep before an exam, knowing that everybody is staying up all night before exams, and all that you remember to write down in the exam is what you read in the lavatory 5 minutes before you walk into the hall. So most people write down beware queer limbo dancers as an as a cause of the First World War.
That'll get you into Oxford. My oldest boy, he went to an art university, but it was originally some sort of little college down in Weston-super-Mare. And I went down when he got his sort of certificate thing at the end of it. And I spoke to one of the tutors there who was meant to be teaching him, and I said, you know, how did Oliver do? And he said, I don't know. And he said, we're one of the forward-thinking universities of further education where we feel that students do their best work when they actually want to come and work. And he said, and Oliver hasn't been here.
Can I speak up for the young?
For the young?
And what would you know about it, Miles?
No, but there's always this thing people banging on about A-levels getting easier and whatever, and partly it's just a sort of generational thing where people are offended by the fact that something that they can remember really clearly is now studied in history lessons or something. So I'd go home and Dad would go, what are you doing for GCSE history? I'm doing Vietnam. And he'd go, well, you can't be doing, that's not history. I mean, I've literally just got back from Grosvenor Square. History.
If I can join in defence of younger people.
Thank you, Andy.
Being a bit younger than Miles. I think the other thing is that they are the most over-examined generation so far. And we got in this mess because successive governments became obsessed with quantifying and measuring something that is quite hard to quantify and measure, which is the expansion of kids' minds.
They test them even before school. They test them at nursery now. You can turn over your fuzzy fold farm sets now.
No, you're right. We should stand up for the young people. I have to say, my 3 kids, what a pleasure it's been for me doing their coursework at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I got a star for an essay about the American Civil Rights Movement that my daughter did.
Home with their essays. How did we do?
I think A-levels are difficult. Maths and science, because when we were at school, nobody knew anything. It was all, God created photosynthesis because God liked the colour green and he liked things that grow. And, we didn't know anything. And here are some chemicals. If we burn these, you will all become sterile. We have to know all this complex stuff and computers.
But you're right. They've got to look everything up as well, because at my school, I went to a very minor public school, and we had the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it was from 1903. It listed the car as an experimental vehicle. I think exams have got easier. When I did mine, they were in Danish, for God's sake. Now,
I think the standard of teaching has gone up, because teachers are always getting loads of stick. But when we were at school, the younger teachers were all acid casualties from the 60s, and the older ones were all shell-shocked from the war. You know, kid farted, and the teacher would dive under the table holding his ear, shouting, "Make it stop! Make it stop, Sarge! I'm not going!"
Michael Gove has called for universities to take a leading role in setting A-level exams in order to properly prepare students for higher education. There is concern that some people are concluding their education without even basic skills in the 3 R's, reading and arithmetic. Two points to Rick. Miles, whose blazing argument failed to give their campaign a lift?
This is really exciting, I think. Not just this question, the whole evening. I mean, it's really, really taking flight. This mayoral business, there was the Boris Johnson and Ken Livingstone. They've had a proper ding-dong. They were on LBC, the popular radio station, and Boris said something like, you know, Ken has a limited company, runs all his funds through that and pays less tax. And Ken says, well, Boris does that too, you know. And he goes, no, I don't. And then they got off air and they were in a lift. And it all went sort of totally haywire, and Boris Johnson turned into a... I'm sure we all have that scene in Teen Wolf when Michael J. Fox really wants a keg of beer. He goes, give me a keg of beer! And the man's incredibly frightened. They went nose to nose, Boris and Ken, and they're the same height. They're not tall men. I'm not saying that's not a reason to trust them, but... present company accepted.
Careful now, Miles.
Hard to really believe what a short man says about anything.
Didn't Ken and Boris choose who was going to go first with the other people there by throwing darts or
yes,
something?
Yes, they threw a dart at a dartboard. And Boris...
Boris threw his at Ken. They actually threw darts, didn't they?
Yeah. Boris Johnson hit the bullseye and went first. I think he also won an executive luggage set and a speedboat.
A fantastic quote in the middle of the argument, a fantastic line from Boris, which got uncommented on because of all the furore. But he said, I am proud to pay income tax. As if in the circles in which he moves, that's some kind of badge of honour rather than a legal requirement.
Do you think there's going to be a film remake of this? I think it'd be absolutely fantastic. We'd have Ken played by Ray Winston and Boris by Renée Zellweger.
But speaking as a Londoner, Londoners don't want to hear about these foul-mouthed fights taking place in lifts between the candidates. We want to see that out in the open.
Yeah.
Preferably in an arena with Boris with one of those little swords and Ken with a net and a trident. That would be...
I've encountered Ken Livingstone. There's a sort of playground he was in with his family. He was going, there you are, what do you think of these? And I looked down, there was Ken Livingstone. I really hope it was his family. He was in a... he was going, there you are, there's some sweets. Which one do you want? Choose a sweet. Go on, no, choose a sweet. No, not that one. Daddy's having that one.
Boris Johnson called Ken Livingstone a liar in a furious confrontation in a lift following a live mayoral debate. The altercation occurred in front of the other candidates for Mayor of London, with Dick Whittington describing the outbursts as shameful. 2 points to Miles. Jeremy, who is banking on charity to make a big saving?
Oh, David Cameron's had an idea. He's got jumpy. Whenever they get jumpy and things are going quite badly, like everyone says, you're out of touch. You're out of touch. And he says, leave me, I need to rest and smoke some opium. Listen, no, you're out of touch. Tell my beaters to drive some grouse for me to spit at. And he's been accused of not eating enough pastry and stuff, and he's got all freaked out. And so they found some money, because periodically they find a bit of money that's been left lying behind the chaise longue. And they found all this money in dormant accounts, because some people have got money they didn't know they had. And David Cameron probably knows that better than anyone. Some people have got these accounts. They've forgotten. But that's because the bank rings you up and when you're on the lav and says, this is the trouble with walk-around phones now. You think, I better answer it. It might be important. And but if it's somebody who really bores you, sometimes you can actually enjoy the fact of being on the lav while they're talking. Because you think, you have no idea of the way in which I'm silently disrespecting you at the moment. They ring you on the lav and you're caught on the hop and you need to sort of, you know, and then they give you some information. They say, have you got some paper? You say, yes, paper, but not a pen. So you do that. And then you've got these money dotted around in these different random accounts. And they don't let you know. They just wait until the government finds it. So the government is raiding all this hidden... It's £400 million, which is more than Osborne spends on cravats in a week. And it's being topped up. What they've got the banking industry to do, they've got the four main high street bank chiefs to ask their wives to make some jam and sell it at a stall in the city. And then they're going to have a tombola. And the money raised will go to help a poor person from the north to find a job. But, yeah, they've cobbled together a few quid to sort of silence people for 5 minutes.
The money, this dormant account, I mean, it's only got to be 15 years. 15 years seems a bit short. I mean, I've seen children be inactive longer than that.
The Swiss did it for years. They started it, really, at the end of the last war. because they had a lot of accounts that were German accounts in the Swiss banks, and they were allowed to lie dormant, I think it was for 10 years, and if they'd not been accessed in 10 years, then the bank swallowed them. Swallow the money, and there were a lot of money.
Does it count for anything you've not used for sort of 10, 15 years? Are they going to come around for my exercise bike? I mean, is there a...
what I think is there's a strange circularity about this big society capital, it's called, isn't it? The money is going to go to charities. Now, the charities in this country are very stretched at the moment. They've got less and less resources. They've had their grants pulled and stuff. So they're at the sharp end of the austerity programme, which has been instigated by the same government that is starting up this philanthropic bank. So it's a little bit like sawing someone's legs off and then having a whip round for a mobility scooter. It's what it's like doing, isn't it?
Did you all think it's worrying that if we're going to try and get charities to just constantly make profits, are we going to suddenly see an aggressive expansion of Oxfam or, I don't know, Battersea Dogs Home releasing a range of fur coats? I just think there's a sort of... This is the news that following the huge success of all the big society initiatives, collectively known as BS, the government have launched Big Society Capital, a new bank. The new bank is designed to lend to charities and community groups and is being started with a fund of £600 million, an amount known in banking circles as a good win. Two-thirds of the money will be sourced from bank accounts that have been inactive for 15 years, like Lord Lucan's current account or Shergar's ISA. Do you know, I had forgotten all about the big society. It's like finding a fondue set in the understairs cupboard. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round one, the scores are Rick and Jeremy have got 4 points, but Andy and Miles are in the lead with 5. We start round two with a cutting from the Annandale Herald.
A lorry driver has maintained a plea of not guilty to falling asleep at the wheel and colliding with a motorway sign advising tiredness can kill.
Our thanks to Keith Appenwall for sending us that. Andy, who's saying bye, Sky, bye?
Oh, this is James Murdoch, who has resigned as the chairman of B Sky B. And you can see why he resigned, because for James Murdoch, that job was impossible. It was a nightmare. There were emails he had to read, you know, sometimes even at the weekend, for God's sake. And there were checks he had to sign and know what they were for. So he just found the job completely outside his abilities. So he's moved on, and he's also probably lost his position as the chosen successor. And
so who will replace Rupert? Is it Lord Voldemort?
It'll be Goneril or Regan. Goneril or Regan or... If this was a Shakespeare play, there would be an illegitimate son,
yes,
who was about to murder Rupert.
But that's two jobs that James has quit in a matter of weeks. It's not going to look good in his CV, is it?
He's like Barbie, isn't he? She's had so many careers. Can't hold down a job. That's the trouble with that girl.
I don't think there was ever Banker Barbie, was there? Was there a Banker Barbie?
I heard Berlusconi was after the job. He wanted to come in and take over B Sky B, but he said that Rebecca Brooks?
He
was a bit too tall. He said so it wouldn't really work for him. Because he needs something to stand on anyway, really. Small chap. I was on a TV programme with him in Italy, and he is small. He is unbelievably small.
All right, he's small. All right. Sandy, no, he's
going to
sit there and take this.
He's smaller than that.
Whenever you go abroad, Rick, do you only hang out with criminals?
Yeah.
I mean, it was one of those silly Italian programmes where you have a sort of somebody like Berlusconi or a member of parliament, and then you have somebody on singing a song or a musician or whatever, then they have a quiz programme and that Housewives' Biggest Knockers competition. So you're sitting on these sofas with a woman topless with Berlusconi and somebody singing and a little quiz. It's
what was your contribution?
Well, I had the woman who'd won the Biggest Knockers competition and I sort of had to weigh up the opposition, which was quite a good fan. But Berlusconi's on everything because he owns the media set anyway.
I just say the news quiz must be so tame for you.
When Rick refers to the woman with the biggest knockers, I think you mean the Minister for Education. To give her a proper a proper title.
Just a month after stepping down as executive chairman of News International, James Murdoch this week resigned as chairman of BSkyB. He resigned because he feared he could become a lightning rod for criticism. Some hope he may yet become a lightning rod for lightning. 2 points to Andy. Rick, now you're going to have to think a little bit laterally here. Have a listen to this.
I've got holes. I've got holes. In different area codes.
Oh, you saw it.
I got holes. Trying to be down with the kids. Rick, yeah. Why are we all being told to pipe down this summer?
Oh, it's the dreaded hose pipe ban. When they made up these regulations, they made a few errors, first of all, and then realised when they said it and had to change things. Like they said, you can't fill your pond. And then they thought, hold on, all the fish will die. So they then said, you can fill your pond if you've got fish in it. Now, I've got a pond and I never had a fish in it till this morning.
You're missing a trick there, though, because I've got the list here. You can also, you're allowed to fill a home birthing pool. I'm just saying.
If you get a little jar of fish paste and rub it over your car, can you wash it then?
No, you can't wash your car. The other daft things is that they've also said you can't fill your swimming pool up. And then somebody pointed out we've got the Olympics coming up. It's got absolutely preposterous.
I think they're bringing in emergency measures to cover that, aren't they?
They are.
The international swimmers who are coming to the Olympic pool won't be allowed to compete unless they bring their own water.
Yeah. They're saying that they're not going to have sort of like drought police, but you can actually... They're asking sort of neighbours to snitch on people, which means that basically if you've got a neighbour you don't like, you can just phone up the council and say, Mrs so-and-so's got a hose going. Now, they will come round, give her the yellow card. She may not even have a garden, but they're going to do it.
Well, you're literally grassing them up, aren't you, then?
What about colonic irrigation?
Self.
I was just offering, because I've got this hose pipe, but I can't use it.
You don't think this whole drought thing is a desperate attempt by the government to get international aid, do you?
We need Scotland's water. We're going to have to sneak up to Scotland in the night with sanitary towels on strings. Dangle them in their locks and then drag them down. Down the A1.
I wish you were in charge.
We should appoint a minister for drought. That's what we did in 76 when it bucketed down. Luckily, Francis Maud wasn't put in charge of the crisis.
Yes.
Otherwise, everyone would have filled their garages with water.
An accident waiting to happen. This week, a hosepipe ban has been introduced by 7 of the largest water companies in Britain, with fines of up to £1,000 for those caught breaking it. I don't need to water my garden. The Thames water pipes run underneath it. It leaks so much, I'm currently living in a swamp. 2 points to Rick. Miles, whose corporation tax has gone down the river?
Well, it's the Amazon people.
Yes.
For some time, Amazon, the online retailer, they've been doing very, very well. They've acted as a sort of high street wrecking ball. They've persuaded the Royal Mail to spend a lot of money on cards saying you were out while we delivered something. And finally now, they're also sort of taking huge amounts of money out of our economy, effectively, because they claim not to be here. They've got sort of big warehouses and things, and they say, oh, no, that's just sort of distribution fulfillment centre. For heaven's sake, no, it's not really anything to do with the business. It's simply a staging post for it. They've been avoiding tax in this way by saying, you know, we always just hang out in Luxembourg. And, you know, who wouldn't, given the chance?
Is Luxembourg a real place? Is there any proof that Luxembourg actually exists?
What? Are you suggesting it's like Brigadoon?
Yeah.
It's the Brigadoon of Europe.
It only appears on occasional tax records.
And it's a radio station that you listen to.
But that was at
night.
Sea. That wasn't really in Luxembourg, was it?
No, it was.
Oh, it was Caroline who was at sea.
Yeah.
But she wasn't a real woman, was she, Radio Caroline?
And hopefully the HMRC sort of get onto them and say, actually, we've got a little Amazon wish list. It's that you pay your tax and you can gift wrap it if you like with a personalised note.
But being under investigation by the UK tax authority is not exactly the most terrifying branch of the civil services. No. Pay your taxes or we will reduce them in the next budget. I mean, yeah. It's not exactly terrifying.
I think the people who... Because there's a couple of thousand of people who work for Amazon in this country, and I think they should take advantage of this case that Amazon are making. I think they should claim that they are, in fact, just transit workers, and they shouldn't pay income tax because they're actually based in Luxembourg.
Oh, you're advocating tax evasion?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I went on Amazon the other day, and it said people who enjoyed avoiding corporation tax also enjoyed avoiding VAT. Online retailer Amazon.co.uk has generated UK sales of more than £7 billion in the last 3 years, yet paid no corporation tax. For those of you who don't know what Amazon is, it's an online shop run by a fearsome race of scantily clad female warriors. 2 points to Miles. Jeremy, who says children are better off with a little Buddha discipline?
Somebody, the leader of the ATL, which is the Association of Teachers and Lecturers, which is Randy Teachers, says that middle-class children are pampered little Buddhas. I don't get the reference, because you think of the Buddha as being a semi-clad, obese, you know, bipolar paperweight. Was the Buddha pampered? I thought he was quite ascetic. I thought he mooned around saying, oh, no more for me, thanks, I'm the Buddha. Being sort of quite, you know, modest and that. Well, we know that middle-class parents indulge their children because they all think their children are fantastic. My children are so bright. Oh, they're very, very bright. That's why they're doing so badly at school, because they're so bright. The children don't understand their answers, you see. I think the reason they misbehave is they're bored in the class because they're so bright. But they're not being stretched properly. And Hermione's so bright, and that's why she misbehaves, I think. She's so much brighter than the other children. And that's why she sets fire to them, I think. Yeah, but middle-class children are very bad, because everyone concentrates on the children of the poor. Oh, these terrible chav children. Oh, it's awful. They're all gypsies, and they're terrible. And they park their caravans in the classroom and it's with their illegal, violent dogs. And they're all footpads and highwaymen, and it's terrible. And these days, your child daren't go to a state school because they'll be instantly impregnated by some awful, awful, beastly costermonger's child. Oh, it's terrible. And, but actually... It turns out that the worst, most badly behaved, lazy and indulged children are the children of the middle class in school. And it's the industrious, hard-working children, barefoot children from those parts of the country where the old fish mines have closed, who are much maligned. They're the salt of the earth, and it's all the children with stupid made-up names like Hosepipe and Ottawa and so they put their children in private schools, the one who can afford it, put them in private schools, and where they make them wear preposterous uniforms. And you think, don't make them... That's a stone magnet, is that blazer? You've just turned your child by making them wear a vermilion trouser suit... You know, in a sort of Norman French falconer's gauntlet. You've made them into a pebble target.
Jeremy, you have to stop because I'm going to die. The General Secretary of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers, Mary Boosted, has criticised middle-class parents for treating their children like little Buddhas who are weighted on hand and foot. According to the Daily Mirror, pupil discipline has diminished since the end of caning, and according to the Telegraph, since the invention of the spinning Jenny gave them too much free time. Ms. Boosted was speaking at the Teaching Union's annual conference, which finished on Wednesday afternoon when delegates were allowed to play hangman and watch a video. The scores are Rick and Jeremy have got 8 points and Andy and Miles remain in the lead with 9. Before we start round 3, here is a cutting from This Is Gloucestershire.
A local crematorium has started serving Sunday roasts. Not all residents are happy. One said, it could be awkward complaining that meat is too well cooked or even burnt in such an environment.
Thanks to Mark Andrew for sending us that. Andy, who wants to rule out some old rules?
this story tends to come around every now and then, where the government try and get rid of lots of laws that they say are outmoded. And they've identified a lot of laws they think are outmoded, especially ones involving personal privacy. And they want them removed from the statute book. And there are a couple caught my eye. There was one, a law, I don't know where it dates from, but it said that it is prohibited to die in the Houses of Parliament.
Yes.
Now, I'm not quite sure how you prohibit people from dying. Tends to be a fairly involuntary activity. I don't know what a sergeant...
It's compulsory
sergeant,
in the House of Lords.
Yeah, I know. If a sergeant at arms sees someone having a heart attack, what is your old... Right? Hey, will you? Can't you read the sign? Dying is prohibited. Go on, crawl out into Victoria Street. I don't know. That was one. The other one, which really caught my eye, was that pregnant women were allowed to pee wherever they liked. Now, why wasn't this law more widely publicised? Because my wife has spent 27 months of our marriage pregnant. If
27
only we'd
known, months? Eh? I think she's just let herself go really badly. I think that's a very long gestation, I think.
But I can remember a lot of really frantic dashes looking for the relevant facilities.
Well,
but
I didn't know this
no,
law, I
and
have
all
to
the
say.
Time, she could have done a Anywhere. Paula Radcliffe in the High Street. It's a very feminist sort of law, isn't it? I wonder, do we know the history of that?
Didn't it used to be that you could ask a policeman for his helmet to do it in? I think that... I think you were allowed.
Really?
Yes.
I think if it's your birthday, and you're outside Buckingham Palace, you're still allowed to take a dump in a soldier's Furby.
Some poor sod is going to listen to that and say, I'm going to try it. I'm going to end up in court on Monday.
Would it not be quite good as a sort of a tourist thing to keep an area of the UK where all these laws still stand, like Britain was 100 years ago? Oh, no, that's the Isle of Man. A report by the Law Commission for England and Wales and the Scottish Law Commission has called for the repeal of over 800 outdated laws going back to the 14th century. The government is keen to simplify laws that it says are no longer relevant, such as taxes on coal and trial by jury. 2 points to Andy. Miles, who refuses to help if you're planning a foreign coup?
Well, a lot of expatriate British people who, up until now, most right-thinking people would only have the most enormous respect for. But for whatever reason, they've been going sort of crazy in the heat. British people who live abroad have started using British consulates and embassies as a kind of drop-in centre or a citizens' advice bureau. People are ringing up and saying things like... what we want is a sort of mid-priced eatery in Montmartre. or we've seen a lot of people with personalised Moroccan crockery. Where could we get something like that? And William Hague has made a speech saying this is not an acceptable use of the Foreign Office's time, essentially. What they want is people ringing up saying, yes, I'm a terrorist, or I've been arrested for some sort of heinous sex crime. That is saying that's more the kind of thing they want. They want more of that and less of silly stuff.
Some of the things were extraordinary. How to put up a chicken coop in Greece. One British tourist called to ask for help in translating I love you into Hungarian. I bet that ruined the moment.
Favourite one was a bloke rang up and I think it was in Rome. He said, could you throw a coin in the Trevi Fountain for me? Because when I was there, I forgot to do it and I'm worried my marriage won't succeed. And I started thinking, well, what is this man like? Obviously, he's a man who's a little low on self-knowledge, probably on his fourth wife, thinking, I don't know, what keeps going wrong with these marriages? Is it the other women or is it the drinking? No, of course, I keep forgetting to lob a coin in a fountain.
I've been married four times. Is that where I've been going wrong?
Yeah. William Hague has urged Brits abroad not to waste embassy time after the Foreign Office received calls asking for help finding false teeth, advice on restaurants, and one man who called the British Embassy in Greece to ask how to erect a chicken coop. Around 6 million Britons live abroad for some or all of the time. For the full names, you need to check the list of Tory party donors. 2 points to Miles. Jeremy, who found lovemaking hard to bear?
Oh, these poor pandas in Edinburgh. I mean, do you want a bit of mood setting? It's hard to do it. The whole lot of jocks standing on going, go on, son, get in here, go on! Get on, go on, go on! wonders. They are the most platonic looking of beasts, aren't they? They go, oh, I'm just a big, cuddly, platonic old mammal. You know, I mean, I'm not one of those people. I mean, I'm not. I don't live in East Anglia. I'm not tempted by beasts of the field. You know, let's imagine that I were. I don't think pandas would be top of the list.
I think it's very unfair that the male seems to have copped all the blame. He probably wasn't ready emotionally for kids, you know. Also, you know, this ridiculous mating system they have, you know, from his point of view, for most of the year, she just doesn't want to know him. Then for 36 hours, she's all over him.
I had a wife like that.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of pressure. Also, I think this constant reference to the love tunnel. Mm.
A lot of the language, actually.
Yeah, rather the daunting euphemism.
They kept talking about the panda has a very small fertility window, which sounds like the creepiest thing you'll ever find at IKEA.
Also, what none of the men in this room have ever had to cope with, they will have had to cope with various emotional pressures, possibly during the sexual act, but they will never have had the thought in their back of their mind that the whole financial future of a zoo depends on it.
I think he was put off by all that black eyeliner she wears. She just looks cheap. Edinburgh Zoo's giant pandas Chan Chan and Yang Wan won't have cubs this year after failing to mate. The pair's interaction was described by the zoo's director of conservation as a fantastic trial run and by Chan Chan as a waste of new underwear. Male panda's sperm reaches its best quality in March and April and declines in May, so always check the bottle. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Jump.
This is sent in by Tish Graham. It's from the Falkirk Herald in the correction and clarifications column. In last week's Falkirk Herald, it was stated that Forth Valley Royal Hospital had two resurrection rooms. This was, of course, incorrect, and it should have read resuscitation rooms.
This was sent in by Anna Williams, and it's from the Helston and Lizard, West Britain. And it says, Dalmatian liver spot puppies, home-reared and very good-natured. We also have one deaf girl for £150.
Let's take a look at the final score. Rick and Jeremy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Andy and Miles with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from ABC News sent in by Richard Stone.
Anne Romney has suggested the solution to people finding her husband Mitt Romney boring would be to unzip him so he could prove he was nowhere near as stiff as his critics allege. Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andy Hamilton, Miles Jupp, Rick Wakeman and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Roderick Crooks, John Hunter and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Ben Partridge and Gronya Maguire. The producer was Carl Cooper.